To speak about is really that focusing on the nitrogen timings and form with the idea of how do we use adaptive management to improve nitrogen. So in general, what I'm going to do is start off just by kind of laying out a problem. You know, that we have a problem with nitrogen management, there's challenges. The idea that adaptive management can help fit into that, but there's a lot of challenges and complexity, and how are we going to really administer that and get it going. And so I'm going to pose a couple of questions at the end that everyone will break out into groups to start talking about, and I'll kind of explain the process and how it works. So the same idea of what we're doing with growers and different people involved to try and implement adaptive management. We'll actually do it as part of the problem in a bigger level, what we need to get adaptive management and nitrogen going. So just a few background slides. I think nitrogen, it's an important topic for a lot of different reasons. We know we need it to raise corn. We know that there's a real economic component, especially, you know, for buying more fertilizer than you get a return on investment on. There's obviously a lot of environmental concerns, so we know it's a relevant topic for adaptive management. Nitrogen is dynamic in the sense there's a lot of different forms. It's different than some of the nutrients, and the idea that when it moves to a nitrate form, it's easily lost through leaching or denitrification. It adds to some of the complexity. When we look at all the different transformations that happen in the soil, there's different forms. It converts in the soil. It's a biological activity depending on weather, temperature, timing, and the magnitude of these shifts are very important. So that all adds to the complexity of knowing how do we really manage nitrogen in the best way. And so from a lot of the work we do in Iowa, and this is Iowa figure here, where the bar graphs show the rainfall by month. So it's a 30-year average. And so it shows as our trends are moving along, we get a lot of rain in the spring. This is when our crop uptake curve, just a very generalized one. A lot of our nitrogen doesn't start coming up until May or June. If we have nitrate available before the plants are taking it up, we have a pretty good chance of having leaching rains to lose it from the soil. And if you look at the majority of our nutrient management plans, the focus is almost exclusively on rate. So maybe adjusted by a crop rotation, but as we look in most states, the differentiation between forms of nitrogen, the timing of nitrogen, the application method of nitrogen, usually are not clearly articulated or distinguished. There's a lot of expert knowledge at local levels where they can say this practice is better than that, and it's undefined. But this just, to me, simplifies a lot of the different processes of complexity that from a nitrogen management perspective, trying to prevent the availability of nitrate form before the plants take it up is a key thing. Most of what our nutrient management has been focused on is trying to do more of a mass balance of how do we get the right amount out, period. Not too much. So if we look at the rainfall patterns in our state from year to year, this is just the March through May rainfall. And we can see we have a pretty big difference from year to year, so we know we can have loss when we have the wrong rain at the wrong time, but we can't really predict it well. But the other thing that's kind of interesting is that you look, we can see we tend to be getting wetter. So it's becoming a bigger and bigger issue. Last graph was a state average. Here's the reality of a state within the state, the differences. We have a big difference within the state, the difference in spring rainfall. So there's a very site specificity to a lot of this. When you go into a field, we can have a big difference of the water even within the field of where the water runs, stands, and the loss on that. So when you look at most of the current planning we have, we don't have a highly accurate process to help people address a lot of these factors. Right now, through a lot of the Midwest, there's a nitrogen rate calculator. John Sawyer from Iowa State was the one who really kind of helped pull it together from the different states. And the idea is that they pool a lot of the research data they have. This is an example for corn after soybeans. They have 176 sites where they put out multiple in rates. They calculated an economic response curve to it. What was the optimal rate? You can adjust it for what the actual price of corn is and price of nitrogen, and it'll give you some of the optimal in rate as well as some of the other economic considerations. And this is, to me, one of the first systems that's really based directly on data. So a lot of time there's a study and then there's an inference about extrapolating that over a bigger area. Here they're pulling a lot of data and constantly adjusting as they're putting more information in on it. And that's not necessarily as strong in a lot of the different systems right now. I mean, there's more expert knowledge than there is a true database or calculation. The thing is that, well, this is really a big advancement on that area. It's focused, it does factor out for crop rotation, and there's difference for some of the manure credits, but it doesn't really address a lot of the forms, the timing, and placement, just because a lot of that data doesn't exist in sufficient quantities. So if we look at the Iowa data, we look at, in this case, of the 176 sites in Iowa. Each dot is one site here. So this would be the economic optimum rate. This would be the economic optimum yield. So this was the optimum based on the price scenario I put in. But look at the spread and what was really right. Anywhere from zero to 200 pounds. And that's very real. And if you look at most of the states, you see a very large spread. It says that's the need. We have a lot of other factors. There's a lot of complexity in the nitrogen management. So I'm trying to say that's why the idea of getting adaptive management in, so we can get more data, more feedback, to hopefully narrow our prediction, just to put it a 50-pound window on there, just to illustrate the point, how many of the points are outside the 50-pound window. And this is something that you can go on to most of the states, and that's why I really like the calculators. It really helps show you what your data is and your information is on this. And I'd encourage everyone to go in and look at this in each state. The other thing it's helpful for is, if you look at it just in the idea of yield goals, the reason a lot of the Midwest moved away from them is, of course, this is the economic in rate in the bottom, the optimal yield. And if we were seeing a strong correlation with the optimal yield and amount of nitrogen, we'd see some type of a relationship. I just drew a line on here. If you assumed a soybean credit, what it might look like. You can see the higher yields, the higher optimum yield had nothing to do with whether you needed higher in rates or not. And yet most of our nutrient management plans are still based on basically a budgeting of some approach. That's clearly part of the equation, but it says there's a lot of other factors as well. So as Tom alluded to, the idea of the adaptive management is the idea it's a process. So that you have your plan, you're implementing it, but evaluate if you're right. Right now, most of our emphasis is, if we're trying to put out 150 pounds, the scale tickets say it was 150, or was 148? Not so much was 150 right after the fact. So one of the ways we found helpful to explain it is that from a nitrogen management strategy, there's really three very general options. One is a prediction only. So we say, based on all our past data, on average, we think this is the right thing. Another one is can we use our prediction, whatever our best prediction is, but then can we evaluate to see if we're right at the end of the year to know how to adjust for future years? Too late to do anything. Or can we use our best prediction, but then also have some tools to help adjust within the season? So we're starting off with the best information, but can we fix it mid-season? So just from a real simple point of view, if we look at a cornfield, you look at it, is it easy to tell if you're within 50 pounds of what's right? So if you're trying to add in the evaluation, so most of the time, 50 pounds of nitrogen, the price of that is about comparable to what 5 bushels of corn is. So if you just simply look at a field, do you know if it's within 5 bushels of the right yield because of nitrogen only, just by looking at it? The answer is no, you can't. So how do you get that feedback to see how well your prediction or your management strategy is working? Of course, there's a lot of different tools. These are just a few general categories. Yield response is very common, stock nitrate, canopy assessments, weather modeling, soil assessment, tissue test. whether you're after the season, for the next season, or within the season. There's a lot of different ways that you can use a lot of that. One of the approaches we've done a lot in Iowa is getting growers to evaluate what they're doing. The whole field was managed one way. They put four strips in. You can see dark green strips where they added an extra 50 pounds. So the question was, did they get a yield response by adding 50 pounds over what their plan was? In this case, they got a big response. This is an example of a grower doing it for multiple years. So from 2001, a corn-soybean rotation, the grower's normal in rate was 130 pounds. He dropped it 50 pounds to compare it to 80 pounds, and they yielded within one bushel of each other. In other words, the extra 50 pounds didn't pay. So the lower rate was the more economic. And the grower did this over a series of years for the different rotations. And I just underlined the last three years, because after doing this for a number of years, he dropped down to maybe a 20 or 30 pound difference in his in rates, and the yield differences were about right to show he was economically optimal for the rate he had. So by getting feedback, the grower was able to get information on his farms to see what was working or not. And back in 2004 at Iowa State, Paget and Lasley interviewed, I believe it was about 80 of the growers that had done evaluations for at least 2 years. And of the growers that had done evaluations for at least 2 years, 84% of them changed their behavior. And the average rate reduction was 32 pounds of N per acre. Some increased, some decreased. We didn't tell them what the new plan was, what the recommendations, but just by helping them get feedback data, they thought they had enough information to change and improve their own bottom line by doing it. A lot of the specifics wasn't just rate, but it was what about different forms of fertilizer. So they'd go into the same fields and compare anhydrous ammonia or UAN. They do it at the same date, same time, same rate. A lot of different possible combinations. But we found that one of the bigger benefits is by pooling the data. So getting growers to work in groups, and you can see clusters. Here's an example of one of the types of evaluations we did, where we were doing about 800 fields to 1,000 fields a year for several years. So the point is we can get more with more feedback, but this takes infrastructure and coordination, but there's a lot of value in it. And we can show statistically differences in some of the different management practices by pooling the data. And so this is kind of a long thing. There was an article in Agronomy Journal that came out a few months ago on this. And there's some other methodologies of analyzing it. I'm going to skip ahead because I've already been notified my time's about out by somebody who's bossing around in the back of the room. But we can get some idea of the relative differences of which practices. We can see differences in the nitrates the plant take up or different things to separate out pre-plant anhydrous ammonia, fall anhydrous ammonia, sidrous UAN, pre-plant UAN, things that aren't necessarily distinguished in most states. We can look at it over years. But there's a number of different states doing this, but to show how to get the process in identifying problems, that the issue that I'm trying to lay out for everyone to break into small groups is, how can we move from a prescriptive-only nutrient management system to one of an adaptive management system? So one, we're collecting data. You know, a lot of the issues of what is meaningful data, what's good data, what's enough data, how you interpret the data to do all that. One of the reasons it isn't done more extensively than what it is there's a lot of challenges. So to me, this is a big issue in terms of how do we get there. So the idea is to break into groups, really, to address the problem. And so one of the first parts of this is, who should be at the table if we're trying to get this shift to an adaptive management system and to manage nutrients? And then also, not only who's at the table, but who should take the lead and why? Because I think getting good information, getting it on a bigger scale with more frequency, I think everyone would agree with the concept But somehow it has to happen. Those standards have to be defined. How does that happen? So with that, that's really the first task, I think, of the breakout groups. And I think Sandy was going to explain more on specific roles.
You'll find at the side of each of the tables a sticky back flip chart. And are pens there too, Tom?
Yeah, I got both.
And I think there's about 10 minutes. If you could talk among yourselves.
If you could talk among yourselves and highlight your ideas on the flip chart paper, and then we're actually going to put them up across this wall here, and Tracy's then going to try to lead a discussion to bring all your ideas together, and I'll try to keep some time, but you have maybe 5, 6, 7 minutes to talk about the answers that you can think of to these two questions: who should be at the table and who should take the lead and why, and then, as I said, Tracy will try to pull all the strings together at the end. So you'll hear from some of us, checking into your groups, see how things are going, and let you know when about 10 minutes are up. Okay, thank you.
Okay, why don't we go ahead and get started a little bit on some summaries. For time's sake, for each group, let's start with who at the table. And what I'd like is for each group to pick just one person, one of the people at the table, and go to the next group. The next group, add someone that wasn't mentioned by the first. And go to the next group, add somebody else. There's overlap. So, and who at this table is the speaker for this one? Since you're pointing all the fingers, I assume you know.
Okay. Well, we identified producers. And the people who help them are the consultants.
Okay, for time's sake, I want you to get one. Okay. So if you said producers, so let's move to the next table. Who would be someone besides producers? Who's the spokesman?
Dealers.
So we had producers, we had dealers.
Our university professionals, extension specialists.
University Extension Specialist.
We had regulators.
Regulators. Anyone else?
NRCS.
NRCS. One group left.
Representatives from the environmental organizations.
Okay. Representatives from environmental organizations. Was there anyone else not listed from going around from all the groups?
Soil labs.
Soil labs, meaning ARS, or what do you mean by soil labs?
Private soil labs.
Soil testing labs, okay.
The consultants or the independent ag advisors.
Okay, the consultants or independent ag advisors. So when they're who at the table, there's people with knowledge. One of the things I just throw out: what about infrastructure? There's technical expertise, there's people with relations with growers, but what about the efficiency of scale? So I think of, like, when you do a lot of testing in broad scale in large areas, I think of like the seed companies. They know how to collect a lot of data and do it in a lot of places and do that. Was that a consideration for the groups? How to do this? I know, I'm not trying to make this a comprehensive list, but if you're talking in a different perspective on things, and I just look at it after the fact, that there's some things I think are obvious and consistent, there's some that some groups thought of and not others, but also in the framework of why. It seems very evident on who is related to the growers, who does nutrient management, who has expert knowledge. But there's a lot of other components as well. So then, if I was to go the same way, let's ask the second question, who should lead it?
Well, we have a little trouble with that, but I think in terms of bringing the groups together, once you're together, you want to really be participatory in your leadership, but we felt we probably need extension and NRCS for sure to help with the leadership.
Okay, so you had kind of an extension, but clearly other people got to be in it.
If you're looking for other people, I think that who should lead it? I think it needs to be somebody independent who's not tied to either the fertilizer sales industry or marketing.
So that is more criteria rather than a specific entity. You want to make sure it's an unbiased person. Is that accurate? Or?
Kind of says the same thing. University extension, somebody else.
The university extension has to be unbiased for sure.
I think we're about the same as everybody else. We talked about maybe hiring a professional moderator to help us in this discussion, but then have the university be the lead.
Okay.
You want us to be a collaborative effort with a possible extension instead of going.
We had identified extension. Okay. So I hear extension, and was anyone in this audience at the one in St. Louis? I think you find it was interesting because in our meeting in St. Louis, I don't think there's a single subgroup that agreed. Mm-hmm. And just for a little bit difference in the demographics, how many people here are extension? What was funny is the one in St. Louis, it wasn't so much that people thought someone should be, it was more everyone thought that their own entity shouldn't be. So it was kind of interesting to see the dynamics because a lot of people had the idea somebody else, this entity should do it. And then someone went, no, it shouldn't be us. And so there was no consensus at the end of it. So this is a completely different outcome just by the people involved in the process.
Does it need to be the same entity in all places or locations?
Well, I think that everyone here is thinking of it more as almost like as a small group or a state, because if you say you're doing it across states, you know, you get into the thing, is there really a strong coordination across states with the same infrastructure in terms of planting our different crops? Or, you know, in some areas, ARS may be stronger than extension in the area. Some areas you have strong rural organizations, and some areas you don't. Some areas have very strong conservation districts. And so there's a lot of regional tendencies to think about in this area. But what's the scale? There's a lot of questions that get into this. So it's not so much that what's the right answer, but the process of getting everyone to talk and what comes up. And so as we're doing it specifically in the nitrogen in the groups, start collecting data and they realize they weren't necessarily asking the right question or this was a better question and how to get there to how to get the data to answer it. So I think that was really the point of this process is just to say, hey, look, we got an issue. How do we move there? Who should be involved? To me, it was really fascinating to see the difference in the answers at the end. This is completely different than St. Louis. I don't know. Do you want to add anything, Tom or Sandy? Well, there was, I would say, a lot of people from NRCS, RCMDs, saltwater conservation districts.
You had informed?
Some commodity. There was a few, but I don't think it was dominated by that.
I'm wondering if how the phosphorus index developed provides a way to go here, because NRCS allowed for the phosphorus index in the 590 standard and then allowed each state to come up with it how they came up with it, but they provided the impetus to make it happen. And that brought the groups together in the states.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good point. You know, that was one of the ways of how they bring it together. I agree. I think that's part of what the NARA 1002 was set up to do, kind of like what SER 17 did with a lot of the 17 year? I don't know, I didn't understand that.
I think 12. All right, Tracy, thanks a lot. That's the end of Tracy's talk, so, and interaction, so.